Two down to Hunter Dozier. And he hits it well to right field. Kepler is back. There's that overhang out there, and Hunter Dozier hits his first home run of the year. This one goes to the opposite field, and the Royals take a 1-0 lead in the first.
And they would go up 2-0 on a home run by Alex Gordon, but that'd be it for the offense yesterday for the boys in blue up in Minnesota. They played three games against the Twins in the four-game series, and every game has ended in an identical 4-2 score. Problem is, the Royals have been the short end of two of those three. First game, they lost 4-2. Second game, Saturday, they won 4-2 thanks to a three-run homer by Whit Merrifield, Mike Matheny's 600th win as a manager at the big league level. And then yesterday, the Royals up 2-0, but end up losing 4-2. They're now 9-13 on the season. Hunter Dozier heard his first home run of the year. Alex Gordon with a homer, snapping an 0-for-15 slump. Brady Singer, the rookie right-hander, goes 5 2/3, 100 pitches, a career high. Just two strikeouts, and the walks to the number nine hitter just killed Singer. Four-pitch walk to Alex Avila, the number nine hitter in the fifth, and then Max Kepler, the two-run homer, give the Twins a 3-2 lead that they would maintain the rest of the day. Royals really didn't have any offensive opportunities throughout the game, just two swings of the bat, Dozier and Gordon for their two home runs on those solo jacks. Mike Matheny, though, pleased with the performance of his rookie right-hander, Brady Singer.
I think he just keeps getting better. The movement on the ball, the way he's learning the league, and you know they just saw him and still being able to mix up the looks. You know, I think he only fell into a pattern one time, really, that I saw, and Kepler was kind of waiting on him, put a nice swing on it, and that ball came back. Ball was really sinking for him and moved back across the plate. Overall, I thought Brady made good pitches in good situations and kept expanding the zone with the fastball and with the slider. Changeup he used effectively, didn't hurt him, and he's getting more confident.
Singer once again 100 pitches, a career high, 5 2/3, just two strikeouts, but he kept his team in it, down 3-2 when he departed, but he takes the loss. The Royals 9-13, they'll finish up their four-game series against the Twins tonight. Another rookie, left-hander Chris Bubich on the hill. He's 0-2 so far this season. Bad news for the Royals in two ways. Salvador Perez was scratched yesterday due to blurry vision in his left eye. Hopefully nothing serious there. Said it might have been a migraine, so he had to sit out yesterday. That certainly hurt the offense. And Jacob Junis is on the injured list with back spasms. So now the Royals are down a starter again. So what they'll do on Wednesday, we don't know, but they might not have to worry about it. Why would I say that? Well, Cincinnati Reds are supposed to come to Kansas City technically today. And then tomorrow would start a two-game series at Kauffman Stadium. But with their final two games of a four-game series against the Pirates postponed because a Reds player tested positive for COVID-19, the Reds continued to wait Sunday for what would come next. Reds players and staff underwent testing on both Saturday and Sunday via drive-through method at Great American Ballpark. The club also continued to carry out contact tracing. The hope is that all the results from Sunday's test, yesterday's test, will be known sometime today. That's also when the team will be learned if it'll be cleared to fly to KC to open a two-game series tomorrow night against the Royals. While awaiting results, the team must stay away from batting practice. No workouts permitted. The Reds learned of a player's positive test during the bottom of the ninth inning of Friday's 8-1 victory over the Pirates, and Major League Baseball moved to postpone their games on Saturday and Sunday. And now reports are that Cincinnati's flight to Kansas City for today has been canceled. That does not mean the game tomorrow night has been postponed. As of yet, they could still be cleared and then fly out tomorrow to KC. So we'll see if the Royals end up playing Tuesday or Wednesday. But if they don't, then the Royals don't have to worry about finding a pitcher to fill Junis' spot this time in the rotation.
Yeah.
St. Louis Cardinals, of course, hit hard by COVID-19. Here's their schedule for the rest of the year. 21 games in August. Huh? 21 total games in August, which they hadn't played any so far. And they're going to have four doubleheaders in August and 32 games in September with seven doubleheaders. Now, those will be seven-inning doubleheaders, but still. Yeah, good luck with that. Yikes. That's a lot of baseball in a short period of time.
Yeah. You talk about trying to find pitching and who's starting this game and that game.
And your season's already so condensed with 60 games.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let's go to the local side of things. Creighton Johnson of Beloit has been named a National Wrestling Coaches Association United States Marine Corps Character and Leadership All-American. Congratulations to Creighton on that. A student who participated in last week's high school football camp for USD 327, which was Ellsworth High School, has tested positive for COVID-19. The camp took place on August 11th. USD 327 and the county health nurse will also require the football team to quarantine. Quarantine period will end on August 25th, with August 26th being the first date the practices can resume. Let's talk about the impact and fallout of that. One student tested positive, and we're going to quarantine everybody on the football team, which means that they won't practice again until the 26th, which means they won't have enough practices before the first game of the year on September 4th, which means, although this is not official yet, unless Keisha's going to make an exception, as of now, if you connect all the dots, Ellsworth would have to skip their first week of a football season, whether they'd make it up or just have to forfeit, cancel, whatever the case may be. So let's ask this question. You and I were just talking about it off the air. How are we going to have a sports season of any kind in high school sports if with one positive test turns into a whole football team being quarantined, and that's 14 days? How in the world are we going to have a season of any magnitude at all, at any level, in regards to high school sports? I don't care what the sport is. If it's a tennis player gets COVID-19, the whole tennis team going to be quarantined? Okay, you're done. Happens during the season, you're giving up 2 weeks of scheduled events.
Yes.
And you can do everything perfect, like we talked about. Beloit could do everything perfect. Lakeside could do everything perfect. Osborne could do everything perfect. Smith Center could do everything perfect. And that's only a small part of the equation, because then you're going to play, let's say Smith Center's got to go to Oakley, or Beloit's got to go to Republic County, or in this case, Beloit goes to Ellsworth, which Ellsworth doesn't play Beloit till week four. But I'm just giving you examples. Or Lakeside goes to Logan. We know that early in the season. What if there's cases up in Logan? How does that, Lakeside can do everything they did right, no positive tests. Logan has a test positive the week of the game. That's that. If we're going to quarantine automatically for one case for 14 days, that takes out 2 weeks of the season automatically. Automatically?
Yes.
So how's that going to work?
It's not.
It's not going to work.
If you're doing it like that with every school and every place that's...
If you're going to automatically 2 week quarantine, this isn't going to work.
No.
You're going to have tons of cancellations, postponements, or I think they're supposedly not supposed to be forfeits, if I remember correctly.
But, yeah, they're not going to go into this forfeit. But
yeah, just go as a not played
game. So,
right. So again, at the end of the season, if you do play a full season, some teams might play six games, some might play four, and some might play eight.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's going to play nine myself. Well, I guess, yeah, nine would be that one extra game, which could be the playoff game or just to fill your schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't, and that's where you see it. Like, you do everything right, but, you're going to get a game affected even.
Right.
Either way, and it's kind of like what I was talking about, when the first Marlins thing happened in baseball. It's like, yeah, it's only one team that's affected, mm-hmm, per se.
But another team has to play them.
It affects the teams that they're supposed to play. They lose games. Mm-hmm. And at one point, it was just the Marlins and Phillies, and like seven teams had been affected by, mm-hmm, it.
Right.
And, in a week, right. And so that's what happens is, you think it's just one team that's affected. Well, I don't know. Do you mess up your schedule and say, hey, this team come this week and we're going to replace, mm-hmm, Ellsworth this week, or
switch your schedule.
Like, you can't do it unless another team
can switch,
has another cancellation,
right,
and another team is playing a team that has, mm-hmm, a quarantine going on,
right?
So you can't even do that, and you just trying to figure out what's going to work and when you do this and that, and it's a mess if you're going to quarantine for 14 days with one test
and school hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
MIAA fall sports suspended until possibly the spring. Here's the commissioner of the MIAA, Mike Racy, on what MIAA spring football might look like. It won't be what they're talking about at the Big Ten or Pac-12 level.
It will not be what some of the larger Division I conferences might be talking about. And I'm not sure they're even going to be able to pull that off. The Big Ten playing a 7-10 game football schedule in the spring. The coaches and the administrators that I've talked to are really worried about doing something like that, where you're basically playing two college football seasons within a 7 or 8 month period of time. So without a national championship for our student athletes to play for, if we do something in the spring, it'll be more like some scrimmages and some games that would allow our student athletes to protect their seasons of eligibility.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. You got no national championship to play for, and that goes back to why would players play in the spring other than for the love of the game? Maybe you play enough games to have a conference champion. That'll be about the best you can shoot for in regards to it. And if you only play seven games, you're not going to play everybody in the conference. There's no round robin, so then who plays who and who gets the tougher schedule? Spring football to me is not happening. I don't understand how in the world it's going to work. I may be dead wrong in that assessment. I think you have so many things to figure out. And this is all assuming things are going to be better with COVID-19, which is only, I say only, 6 months away.
Yeah.
I don't know how much progress we're going to make between now and then. If we're going to quarantine one case, every single case, and everybody's got to quarantine 14 days, there's just no way. There's no way. there's just no way. No. Just do the math. I mean, it's pretty simple. Okay, so Oklahoma football coach Lincoln Riley says 9 players on Oklahoma football team tested positive for COVID-19 upon returning to campus after being off the previous week. Here's the deal. They did a great job, Oklahoma. They had no positive cases. Things were going great. Then they had about a 6-day break, and Coach Riley allowed the players to take a break, go home, whatever. And 25% of the football team, which is only a quarter, just a quarter of the football team, went home to their own communities, blah, 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 came back. Who knows who they fraternized with? Don't know. And 9 are positive. 9.
Yeah.
And that was just a quarter of the team that went home. 9 came back positive for Oklahoma. So, at Oklahoma State University, a sorority house is under quarantine after 23 members of a sorority house. We haven't even gotten classes started yet. A sorority house, Oklahoma State University, under quarantine after 23 members of the sorority tested positive. The entire sorority house, Oklahoma State, is in isolation or quarantine after the confirmed cases, and residents will be prohibited from leaving the facility. Well, that sounds like fun. The university and Payne County Health Department are monitoring those involved in conducting contact tracing to prevent further spread. We haven't even had classes yet. And if you've seen over the weekend, kids are back on campus at some places, and classes are not started yet. And anybody want to take a guess how many masks they're wearing?
Not a lot.
Not very many. Pictures of bars in Manhattan, Kansas, in our backyard. Down at Auburn University, at Oklahoma State, a huge line. Nobody wearing a mask to get into a club. Saw that last night. And so there's two ways to look at this if you're a person out there, if you're an older person perhaps, and I'm talking older as in you're older than a college kid. So whether you're 35, if you're 44 like me, and Dusty's how old?
I'll be 37 in a couple
days. So Dusty's in his 30s, I'm in my 40s, and then my parents are in their 70s, and we got people of all ages. The first reaction is all those kids are stupid. This is generalizing what people are saying. I'm not saying these kids are stupid, all right? I want to make this very, very clear. I'm just trying to prove a point. So that's what I've seen on social media. Reckless, irresponsible, stupid, selfish, have no regard for human life other than their own, blah, blah, blah. I've seen all that stuff. And I do understand people being angry about it. I do. At the same time, in fairness to the young people out there, how many of us older people were going to school when there was a pandemic going on? Raise your hand. I don't see any.
No.
Okay. When you were 18, 19, or 20, or 21, would you, and be honest with yourself, whether you're somebody listening right now that is 70 years old, 80 years old, 60, 50, 40, 30, 25, whatever, male or female, it doesn't matter. When you were that age, were you responsible? Were you really mature, responsible, and you would have sacrificed not going out with your friends, you wouldn't have partied, you just would go to college, be there before classes start, and you just stay in your dorm room the whole time? Or would you go out and fraternize? Be honest. And the answer, unequivocally, for almost everybody out there is no. Now, you might not go to a big party with hundreds of people. You might not go out to the bars, but you're still going to go out and fraternize with your friends.
Yes.
Because we still do that. Us adults are doing that. We're all doing that. I mean, we might, you know, it might be the neighbors come over for a drink, or it might be, you know, you're at a basketball practice. That's fraternizing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. What do you think is going to happen when school gets in session? All these people are going to be fraternizing, you know, second graders, kindergartners, fifth graders, eighth graders, freshmen, seniors. I think we need to be a little bit careful of painting a broad brush and just ripping young people, because when you were 18, would you have just stayed in your room and just locked yourself up on campus? Come on, be honest. And if you say you would have, I don't think you're being honest at all. Or it's easier for you to say because nobody's going to check out what you did when you were in college.
Because
you didn't have to deal with this. So I'm not wanting to make excuses for young people, but I do want people to understand, put yourself in the shoes of young people. And vice versa. If you're a young person, you're like, oh, come on. It's not that bad of a thing. You catch it. You get a few aches and pains. In fact, you might not even know about it. What's the big deal? It's blown out of proportion. And young people might not understand that at all. And they make fun of the older generation because they're all scared and petrified and panicked. But if they had one family member that died of COVID-19 or had somebody afflicted that was down and out for a while with COVID-19, they would probably think differently, wouldn't they?
Yes.
So it works both ways. You see how I presented that from both sides? So that's where we go back to the, can we be a little bit more understanding and put ourselves in the shoes of other people? If you're a young person getting all mad because older people are saying, wear a mask or please wear a mask, and you want to say, oh, they're old fuddy-duddies and they're not living life and they're scared, okay, understand where they're coming from. Okay, try to understand to be in their shoes. If they have an underlying health condition, they really don't want a whole bunch of people partying and then coming back to visit grandma and grandpa. All right? On the flip side, if you're a grandma or a grandpa and you're sitting here, or even a mom or a dad or anybody out there listening now of any age older than 25, let's say, yeah, you might want to understand a little bit about what these kids, they're living their life. They're not living in fear. Now, are they a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Naive, maybe? But weren't we all naive at that age? Of course
Absolutely.
We were. Should I know adults that are 45 that are naive right now?
Yeah.
So we need to try to understand both sides. And we go back to that whole thing, don't we? Understanding both sides, meeting in the middle, understanding what other people are going through. No! To heck with that. Those college kids are idiots. Old people are scaredy cats. That's about the cleanest way I can say it.
Yeah.
And that's what I see on social media pretty much. No. You're living your life in fear. You're not living your life. You guys are reckless and don't care about anybody else's life. You just want to go get drunk and party. That's what I've seen. And I'm not surprised
at all.
That's
basically broad, brush generalizations that you're seeing.
Yes.
I mean, those are the reactions.
Which you could have predicted before school even got back in the session or before they went back on campus.
Yeah.
We knew this was coming. Don't act shocked and surprised, people.
Yeah. And the Manhattan thing that I saw, the pictures came from a guy that just graduated college. So you should maybe figure, you've been there, you know what it is. But here's one thing about that I saw, too, that kind of... It hit me a little bit. Like, as I'm looking at the pictures from the bars in Manhattan, it's like, at some point, doesn't the onus have to go on the business owner too?
Yes.
To not let that many people into their establishment? But again, I say that, and it makes me sound like, well, this business is terrible. They're stupid for letting that many people in. Basically, it's what it might sound like when I say that. At the same time, you come on the other side of that and understanding this business has not had a lot of business in the last 4 or 5 months.
Right, so they need business.
And if we can get that many people
Absolutely.
In here and not get in trouble for it, we're going to do it.
Right.
And so, again, it's you can come on both sides of that and understand that, they're a business in a college town that hasn't had kids on their campus since March. And so they're going to take advantage of that if they can.
Absolutely.
So, again, it's just like you can look at it on either side of everything when you're talking about that. So, and listen, I'm going to tell you right now, the pictures I saw, you don't even need to have a discussion about masks because with that many people, masks are really irrelevant.
Well, if you're a drinking establishment, you're going to pull the mask down drink, and then you're going to talk.
And you're going to talk to each other.
Sure you will.
And as many people as were in those buildings... It's social distancing is not happening either, and once you get that many people together, the masks are only going to be so effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the guys complaining about masks, and I'm like, don't know if it would have helped if they were wearing masks as close as those people are. And again, in the establishment that they're in, they're gonna have to take those off and drink their adult beverages
right.
whenever they can anyway, and they're not going to remember to put them back on once you start doing that.
No.
I'm not going to do I'm honestly, if I'm in a place like that and I'm drinking and eating and stuff, I'm not wearing
Well, when you
masks.
Go to a regular restaurant, you wear them and go in, and once you sit down and eat with the people you're eating
off.
With, you take them off. You're allowed to do that, and you eat. Obviously, you got to have them off to eat and drink, and then when you're ready to leave, then you put them back on and walk out. Well, now bars and pubs and places like that, that's a little bit different. A whole bunch of people come over, they hang out, they're around you, blah, blah, blah. You drink a little bit, then you forget to put the mask back on if you even have it on to start with. You probably don't even remember where you put it. You dropped it. You lost it. Who knows what else? And then, or the great thing is you get your mask mixed up and now don't remember which one you had, and you put it on anyway.
Yeah.
This and that. It's, you know, it. My wife and I were talking about this yesterday. She goes, you know, I think if I was in college, I'd put a mask on. I said, honey, if you walked into an establishment with a whole bunch of people and they weren't wearing masks and you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age in college, if everybody else is not wearing a mask, you're going to walk in and you're going to keep that mask on? No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Not at that age. Now, maybe at your current age, you might. And even then, I would say it's very iffy there. I mean, I think there are people now that walk in the stores, have a mask on. If they look around, see nobody else wearing one, they take it off. Now, I think some keep it on,
mm-hmm.
and that's great because you're protecting others, not necessarily yourself. You're protecting others. That's what they say with the mask. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I understand the mask thing, and I don't know all the – I haven't seen scientific numbers. Like, I've seen all kinds of people in support of them throw something out there, and I've seen people against them throw stuff out there. I don't know what to believe. And this is not a mask discussion, but you know, how effective are masks? It seems like they at least help. College kids are not going to wear masks, and they're definitely not going to wear a mask when they're going to a bar. Because, as you said, what do you do at a bar? You drink.
You're drinking, you're talking, and it's loud.
And it's already...
Imagine trying to talk to somebody when they can't see your lips moving if it's so loud. That
right.
You know,
I went into
just examples of what happens in those places.
I'll give you an example. I went in last night to a place to eat. My son was with me, my oldest. And I had my mask on. The person behind the counter had the mask on. And I had to repeat myself 3 times.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't understand what I was saying. I had the mask on. So now imagine you do that in a bar. You just like, what happens? When somebody can't hear you, you just rip the mask off and say, now you can hear me? Yeah, sure. That's great. And then don't put it back on.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, I don't hear the greatest sometimes. And I've had issues with, you know, going to places where they're not talking very loud. And I have to either just ignore what they're saying and think I know what they said, or then ask, wait, what did you say?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to do it. Like,
they called you an idiot. And you're like, hey, thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't know what they said.
I want the number 2.
That wasn't what I asked you at all, Dusty. Oh, yeah. Okay. So let's go on. A little more negative news, and then we'll get to some positive news here in a moment. The NCAA's chief medical officer painted a bleak picture on the outlook of playing college football during the coronavirus pandemic. It's good to know the NCAA finally has somebody to speak. Without more rigorous testing, he believes college sports are likely to be canceled altogether. In an appearance on CNN, Dr. Brian Hanline said that without an improvement in nationwide testing, there's no way we can go forward with sports. He added that everything would have to line up perfectly for fall sports, including football, to be played. However, here's the good news, perhaps. There is a new COVID test. Is it a game changer for sports? It could be. And for society, U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted emergency authorization for the public to begin employing a saliva-based test expected to significantly increase the availability, turnaround time, and affordability of combating the coronavirus epidemic in the United States. Developed by Yale University. And by the way, if this ends up working really well, give Yale automatic bid into the NCAA tournament next month. And jointly funded by the NBA and NBA Players Association. Of course, the NBA in a bubble, and that's worked very well so far. The testing method was granted approval by the FDA on Saturday. The test is coined Saliva Direct. It's called Saliva Direct. Was developed to throttle up the screening process for a wide swath of Americans. The FDA approval marks a significant turn for testing in the U.S., creating the opportunity to make regular testing more readily available. The retail pricing and companies that will carry the testing into the public domain are yet to be determined. The developers have revealed that testing could be done for as little as $4, although retail pricing is expected to be higher than that due to the cost of production, marketing, supply lines, and retail outlet markups. The test is expected to be a boon for the general public and professional sports as well. The testing of players and team employees would become an affordable and consistent occurrence, and it could help fans keep themselves safe before and after event attendance. Multiple NFL general managers told Yahoo Sports in early June that medical advisors told them a fast and affordable saliva test would be a game changer for the league's fall season. The peer review process has yet to take place on the saliva direct findings, but the data produced by Yale showed nearly identical results between groups of NBA players and staffers who were given both the nasal swab test, which is a bit invasive, and saliva testing, which is a lot easier to handle. Mm. With the funding and backing of the NBA and the Players Union, that testing took place as the league began to ramp up preparations to begin its season in its Orlando bubble. So that is good news. So let's tie those two together. The NCAA's chief medical officer paints a bleak picture and says, without more rigorous testing, without an improvement in nationwide testing, we're not going to go any further forward. Now, this new test could certainly help in that regard. The question is, how soon would it be distributed? How long will it take to get out there? And then, you know, there's going to be people that are going to be opportunists that are going to mark it up and charge $50 or something stupid like that when it's a $4 test. Time will tell. It will take time for it to get out there. That's what we said about a vaccine. If there is a vaccine that absolutely cured COVID, it's going to take a while to get it distributed and sent out. And then, of course, who are the first people that are going to get it? Well, probably the politicians, to be quite honest. So that's an update on COVID-19 in regards to the testing side. That is some good news for a change. Could be a game changer for sports and society. Let's cross our fingers and hope so. All right. Now, the Big Ten's decision to call off football in the fall is catching a lot of heat. Although I told somebody yesterday, you know, in 2 weeks, this all is a moot point. I'm not saying it will be. I'm just saying, it's trending that way, isn't it? Like, in a couple weeks, all of this might be a moot point. We can talk all about the Big 12 having this great opportunity. We can talk about the SEC, ACC, and the Big 12 going to move way ahead of the Big 10 and Pac-12 if they have a full season of fall football. We can talk about how the Big 10 messed up and didn't play fall football and, the economics of it all and so forth and so on. And it could be tomorrow. It could be next week. It could be the 1st September. It could be right after Labor Day. We're all going to go. Didn't matter. We wasted a lot of time talking about nothing. The Big Ten and Pac-12 were just ahead of the curve. They knew what everybody else thought was probably coming, but was trying to avoid and being wishful and hopeful thinking. And so now the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC say, hey, okay, we're joining them. We're done. Could very well happen.
Yes.
Okay. So, but for now, this is what we'll spend time on because we can't predict the future.
No.
And we hope that what we just said doesn't happen, although I think it's highly likely. Was the Big Ten's decision based on faulty information? This is a story that's come out. The Pac-12's medical advisory board shared the conference's rationale behind its postponing of the season. The Big Ten has not been equally transparent. Thus, many people involved have been in something of an uproar. Parents at the University of Iowa, Nebraska, Ohio State, and even Michigan have either written open letters to the Big Ten's leadership or have openly questioned in the press whether or not the conference has made the right decision. The closest we came to transparency is the revelation that there are Big Ten players, 10 of them, diagnosed with myocarditis, an inflammatory heart condition which appears to have resulted from a previous COVID-19 bout. However, as former Michigan defensive end and father of current Wolverines defensive end Chris Hutchinson, an ER doctor at Beaumont Royal Oak noted, the evidence is anecdotal and not mutually exclusive to the coronavirus. Reportedly, the Big Ten's presidents and medical advisory board came to the conclusion partially based off a study posted in the Journal of the American Medical Association on COVID-19 and the resulting myocarditis effects. However, one University of Michigan cardiologist who openly says he's not a football guy took to Twitter on Saturday morning to dispel much of the study, noting how faulty it appears to be. While he says he's not sure if football should still be played or not, he insists that the Big Ten should not have relied heavily on a flawed study to make such a crucial decision. Vink Murthy said on Twitter, he's the cardiologist referring to, the Big Ten report on COVID relies heavily on this paper, which found rampant abnormalities among normal controls and had many statistics that make absolutely no sense. It's time to retract or correct this paper and this study. Okay. This is something Jay Billis has been saying and other people have been saying, and I do understand it. You're saying they can't play. Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, says after speaking with the players, this and that, and these people from Michigan, Ohio State, and Nebraska have sent letters, the commissioner said, you didn't talk to any of our players. What conversations did you have with the players? And Kevin Warren, when asked directly on his own network, dodges the questions. He can't answer.
They didn't.
Because they didn't.
Yeah.
The players didn't have a voice. And you wonder why there is a movement towards unity in college football. You wonder why the players want to have a players association, just like the NFL has a players association, MLB and NBA. You know why? This is why. Because they need to have a voice. So the only way they can have a voice is to throw stuff on Twitter. Social media is basically the only time they have a voice. The parents are trying to provide a voice with letters to the commissioner, which, you know, honestly, I don't think are going to matter. But at least they can try.
Yeah.
But Justin Fields has done something I think makes some sense. He's done an online petition. He has a petition online, over 200,000 signatures so far. 200,000 signatures so far. Says, we just want to play. Sign this petition so we can play football. We want to play. If these other conferences can play, why can't we play? Plus, we've not been given really good information as to why we can't.
Yeah.
And myocarditis, as you and I have talked about, is associated with any respiratory disease. If you have the flu, you are in. You have a chance to develop it.
If you've ever had any kind of bacteria in your body,
right.
There's a chance
it's not just COVID.
That you could get myocarditis.
Yes.
Also, it's a very, in about 99% of people, I would imagine, and I don't have the official numbers, but that's one that I did hear, that 99% of people, it's going to be very, 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 very mild effects that can be taken care of with medication.
Right.
And it never comes back. It's not, this isn't like a disease that is going to stick with you for your whole, it's not chronic, okay?
Right.
For the majority of the people, and again, we're talking about numbers kind of like we're talking about COVID numbers with survival rates and things like that. But myocarditis is inflammation of the heart.
That's
okay?
What it is.
Myo is muscle. Carditis is, card is inflammation and itis, or card is heart. Itis is inflammation. I have myositis. I have muscle inflammation, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I mean, that's what it is. I don't have the card part of it because my heart muscle's not inflamed.
Right.
But I've had all those tests to make sure it's not, believe me. And so, you know, the testing is so advanced and easy this day and age, and it's just, it's a thing that comes with life for mm-hmm. a lot of people. You don't have to be an active person to get it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be an athlete. You have to be human mm-hmm. to get it.
Right.
Okay? That's it. And again, it can be taken care of rather quickly, and you can go on to your regular life once you're over the bacteria, once you're over and have it all flushed out of your system. Now, obviously, it's something that you probably continue to track if you're going to be active and you're going to be athletic. Because obviously inflamed heart muscles are not good when your heart's going to be pumping a little faster if you're an athlete.
Right.
And I get that part of it. But there's no – and how do they prove that it was COVID that gave them the myocarditis?
Once again,
you know, it's like you can't prove that. You can make an assumption, mm-hmm. an assessment, saying you had COVID, so this is probably why you had it.
Right.
But what if it was something else that you had that led to it?
Well, and
that's the proof is not going to be there.
And it's fear of liability. That's why the
exactly.
Big Ten, that scared them. Just the one study scared the heck out of them. Here's what Justin Fields put on his petition of We Want to Play. We, the football players of the Big Ten, together with the fans and supporters of college football, request that the Big Ten Conference immediately reinstate the 2020 football season, allow Big Ten players, teams to make their own choice as to whether they wish to play or opt out this fall season, allow Big Ten players, teams who choose to opt out of playing a fall season to do so without penalty or repercussion. We want to play. We believe that safety protocols have been established and can be maintained to mitigate concerns of exposure to COVID-19. We believe that we should have the right to make decisions about what is best for our health and our future. Don't let our hard work and sacrifice be in vain. Hashtag let us play. That is the petition from Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields. And I give him credit for having his voice heard. Using the power of social media, over 200,000 people have signed that petition. Now, let me go back and connect the dots on something here before we get some sound from Greg Sharp, the voice of the Huskers, about the impact of the Big Ten decision on the University of Nebraska. And also coming up on the show, a former chief is returning to the NFL, talk about the financial impact of COVID-19 on universities, and we'll look at the NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs as well. That's coming up yet on the Sports Ticket. Stay tuned for that. So I saw an athlete put on social media, and I thought it made a lot of sense. And this athlete says, listen, all you say you want us to play, you want us to play, you want us to play. And then that person showed pictures of all of these students partying and in lines without masks and inside establishments and said, this is what's going to stop us from playing. And that athlete is absolutely 100% correct. And education should always come before extracurricular activities. It should. Now, we have our priorities, you know, backwards in this country many times. You know that. Sports is like, I've seen people just go crazy about sports, but I was like, what about education? Don't you want a kid what about the degree? Wouldn't it be better if school was in session all year long and sports was eliminated? Wouldn't that be, at least of the two you had to pick, which would be better to have? Well, I don't know, financially, it might be sports, but in regards to the future of your life as a student, you're better off getting your education. You play sports but no education, okay, not everybody's going to play professional football and make a ton of money for a living. We know that. I thought it was a great point, because here's what happens. If the camp on campus, once kids actually go to classes, which hadn't even started yet, and you've got already some outbreaks at campuses, a sorority house with 23 members that are positive at a sorority house, Oklahoma State already, if you get to the point where you have this big outbreak at all these campuses or some of the campuses and you shut down the campus and then you got to go to online learning, how can you possibly justify having sports if you're not going to have kids on campus? Kind of like the argument, how can you justify having kids on campus if you're canceling football? That's the argument against the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You can have all these people in dorms and this and this. Michigan State can have intramural sports, by the way.
Yeah.
But we can't play football. You can have your 20 hours
with the football team, with your actual team.
You can still
team.
Practice at a football team, but you can't play games because, you know, that's where you really get COVID, only during games, not at practices or workouts. But on the flip side of that argument would be if you stop school and you say it's got to be all online for the rest of this semester or the rest of this year for college, if it gets to that point, which I think is possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can justify, well, we're still going to play sports. Although I could argue you kind of could, because you got a smaller group of people together and so forth and so on, more protocols to keep you safe. There are less protocols to keep 50,000 students on campus safe than there is to keep, you know, 50 football players safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they are safer on camp. Well, they're safer in a practice field. Are they safer on campus than going back to their hometown? It depends on probably where they are and what the situation. Okay, so I think that was a great point by the athlete the other day. I can't remember who it was, but it might have been a K-State football player. I can't remember for sure. It was a college athlete, though, saying, dude, you want us to play? You guys got to do your part here. You know, we're sacrificing. We're living somewhat in a bubble. We're being careful. The ones that really want to play are not going out and partying. Now, the problem is you got to have a few players that know they're not going to play, say, who cares? I'm going to go party anyway. That could ruin everything for these athletes trying hard to play. But also, it's just regular students who, you know, the regular students don't have a dog in the fight from the standpoint that if they don't care about sports, they don't go to games, they don't really get into it too much, or maybe they do, but they're like, hey, I'm going to party. I'm going to have a good time. I'm a freshman. I'm coming to college. I'm independent. Am I personally, just me, going to prevent Big 12 football from happening if I go party in Manhattan or Lawrence, Kansas? Of course not. True. Individually, you won't. But collectively, you will. And that's going to be the next thing. Even if the Big 10 changes their mind, which I don't think they will, and Justin Fields gets what he wants and they want to play, which I commend him for fighting for what he believes in. If, in fact, things get overridden and they change their mind and they go at this thing, the Big Ten joins the ACC, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the ACC, SEC, is joined by the Big Ten. The Big Ten reverses their decision. I don't think it's any different, no matter where the conference is, that it's going to be the students on campus that are going to ruin things for the athletes to have a chance to play. It's not going to be the commissioner saying, we ain't playing football. That's the easy person to point at. Which, honestly, that's the person to point at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But a couple weeks from now, you may go back and say, commission was ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Again, we can't predict the future and what's going to happen in that. But, I mean, there's obviously things you can do as an individual that can maybe expedite the process of actually having sports and things of that nature. But, again, like we talked about earlier, most of those people we're talking about are kids still. In the realm of growing up and understanding responsibilities and what's right and what's wrong. And so, you know, again, like we talked about earlier, we've all been there before. And what decision do you think you would have made then?
Right.
Even in this, like you think that, like you just said, like me individually, one person, I'm not going to.
Right.
That'd be a problem.
Well, but see, that's kind of how you go with voting. Well, I'm not going to vote. My vote doesn't count, which maybe it doesn't. But collectively, if you had a movement and you got people together in a good or a bad way, that could have an impact. Greg Sharp, the voice of the Huskers, was on last week. Yeah, the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson, last Wednesday. The voice of Oklahoma Sooners, Toby Rowland, on Thursday. And then Friday, the voice of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, Greg Sharp. Greg said some very interesting things. And all those interviews are available on our podcast page at our website, katycountry94.com. Go to the podcast link and click on the sports ticket, and you can pull up all these interviews we've had in the past. So I asked Greg Sharp, why is Nebraska catching so much heat from the national media about comments Scott Frost made about, we just want to play? Never did Scott Frost say, we want to leave the Big Ten, we want to go to the Big 12. He never said that. But Michael Wilbon, Desmond Howard, and these, you know, big, huge heads at ESPN and national media don't take the time to really understand what's happening they just want to vent. They just want to say and spew stuff because they're Big Ten alums of other universities, and they look at Nebraska as the, you know, the outsider that came in, and they should be grateful and grovel at the feet of everybody in the Big Ten because they joined our conference, and they're making money off of us, and who's to say they're anything? And they don't understand or respect the tradition of Nebraska football. They don't, and why would they? They never were a part of the conference when Nebraska was awesome. They don't understand it. They don't. That'd be like Ohio State coming to the Big 12. The Big 12 wouldn't fully understand Ohio State's tradition, in fairness. So ask Greg Sharp, why is it that Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and others have said they still want to play, and yet it's Nebraska catching the heat from the national media?
That's the $64,000 question, and I don't have a good answer. At no point did Bill Boos, did any university official say, we're looking to leave the Big Ten. Huh. They said, we're looking to play football. We think we can do it safely. We'd like to play football. We'd like to try to recover some of the millions of dollars we're going to lose by not having a fall football season for our athletic department. We believe we can do it safely. And you're right, those other schools also said, particularly Ohio State on two different occasions, we're exploring other options. And yet you have the Desmond Howards of the world just lowering the boom on Nebraska. Who are they to say they think they can do this? Well, as I pointed out to some people, Wade, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska, the three closest universities that play Division I football are Iowa State, Kansas, and Kansas State, and they're all right now playing.
Yes.
And that's who Nebraska recruits against on a daily basis. And so all of a sudden, if you're not playing and they are, that's going to make your job and the future of your program even more difficult. It was really interesting. It was uncalled for. Scott Frost was adamant. No, we are a proud member of the Big Ten. We want to play the Big Ten schedule we were shown a week ago, but if that can't happen, we'd like to find some opportunities for our guys to play.
I also asked Greg Sharp, the voice of the Huskers, on Friday, what about the Big Ten? Is it a good fit for Nebraska?
I think it's been fine. Nebraska's been a member of that league for 10 years. They have certainly benefited from the fruits of the dollars that come to them from being a member institution for that. I don't know that I see that a major shift. I do think, you know, we're getting close. I think we're 2 to 3 years away, Wade, from the next round of television negotiations.
Yep.
For all these conferences. And I do think that there may be some more shifting that goes along. I just know that, you know, you read the tea leaves, you talk to the university officials, and I just don't see that happening. A lot of it would just be you don't want to admit maybe you made a mistake 10 years ago. And I'm not saying Nebraska made a mistake.
Right.
I'm saying that, you know, it was at the time you didn't know if the Big 12 was going to survive. There were all kinds of rumors Texas was going to break off, go to the Pac-12. Nebraska made a decision at that time that was very, very logical and made a lot of sense. But, again, I think that there could be another realignment-type shift coming in the next 5 to 6 years with all these television deals rolling over. And those television deals may look different, Wade, because, you know, ESPN's losing a lot of money. They may not have the kind of money. A lot of people are cord-cutting, getting their – the ESPNs aren't able to recoup their money from the cable systems like they have been in the past because the cable systems don't have the number of subscribers. People have gone more to YouTube TV and that type of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's what is fascinating about college sports is it's never set in stone and things always do tend to change.
That is for sure. What about the financial impact for universities that will not have college football this fall? Certainly the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are impacted by that, and perhaps the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC would be next. Here's Greg Sharp, the voice of the Huskers, on the dollars and how much Nebraska is affected by a loss of college football in the fall.
$12 million for a home game for Nebraska to put the 90,000 in Memorial Stadium for tickets, concessions, selling programs, parking, all that. So times that by 7 home games that you're losing. And then the television revenue, which is a huge piece of the chunk. Bill Moose said, and back in June, at the end of June, Bill Moose implemented some cuts, 10% cuts across the board for every sport to cut their budget for the upcoming year. They eliminated 17 positions from the athletic department staff. He said basically that was to try to offset, at that point they thought might be $10 to $12 million in losses. Now it looks like it may be about $100 million in losses. So I can't imagine what they're going to have to do. I'm assuming you're going to see some elimination of sports. You're going to see some, obviously, elimination of staff members. I think it could be a deep cut, and it's not just going to be Nebraska. It's going to be every school in the Big Ten or the Pac-12 that aren't playing football right now. And those other three Power 5 conferences that are holding on, they're trying to avoid having to make those same type of decisions. But it is, as I mentioned to Bill Moos, it's a Mount Everest of a chore ahead of him and his staff to try to figure out how do you do this until the coffers open up again and you're starting to collect some revenue off of your sports. I wouldn't wish that on anybody, the decisions they're going to have to make in the next 3 to 4 months.
A lot of money lost. Just to give you an idea of the financial impact, Stanford cut 11 sports. Akron has slashed its athletic budget by 20%. As of late June, and now we're talking 6 weeks ago, this has certainly have changed probably since then, more than 130 Olympic sports have been cut across all NCAA divisions during the pandemic. Only 57 have been cut over the last 3 years combined. So that's double. And that's since the end of June. And Mark Johnson has been all over this, the voice of Colorado Buffaloes. We had him on about a month ago. He said all that before this even happened. He said there are going to be less opportunities in college sports if you're going to have a shortened season or if you're going to have no fans in the stands. He wasn't even talking about no football at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he mentioned the possibility. And he said back then, too, there aren't going to be any football. There's no football except Division I. That's all you're going to have. And it'll be the Power 5 is the only ones that can afford it. And here we are. We basically have three Power 5 conferences. Now, the Sun Belt, I think Conference USA is still trying to play. There's some other conferences still trying to play. But you only have 47% of all the member institutions of Division I that are still trying to play, which means that all the fall sports championships have been postponed or canceled from fall, maybe in the spring, which affects Nebraska volleyball. They will not play this fall. There is no national championships. We already talked about the MIAA. We've seen Division II, Division III. There are no fall sports championships. So what's the point of playing if there's no championships to play for? So right now, you still get the college football playoff. Supposedly is going to happen. And people could argue, well, how do you do that with two-fifths of your Power 5 not even playing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they chose not to play, I guess, is the way you look at it. You keep that intact. That's another reason why spring football is not going to happen, in my opinion. Why are people going to go play? If you're at Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska, Ohio State, I mean, for the love of game, fine. But are you going to go play in the spring when there's nothing to really play for, per se, and you're going to risk being hurt? And if you're a first, second, third round projected draft pick, why would you take a chance on playing? Secondly, you don't know the eligibility situation. You better have that figured out before the spring. If, in fact, you're like a freshman or sophomore that wants to know, okay, if I play 7 games, is that a full year of eligibility in the spring or not? How's that work? And the other problem you got, and we've talked about it before, let's say you only play 7 or 8 games in the spring, but then they expect you to play a full fall season. Now you're going to play 22 games in a span of 8 months. The NFL players don't even do that.
No.
So there's all kinds of problems with spring sports. There's all kinds of problems, obviously, with the finances. And so what you're going to see, and I'm very confident in this, and I really wish I wasn't, but from all the people that I talked to, and you got play-by-play voices from all these different, I mean, we had the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10 represented 3 straight days on this show. That's a whole 3 different regions of the country. And they're all in unison saying spring football is not logical.
No.
It's not logical. It's just not logical.
It backs up what you think anyway.
Yeah,
and then
right.
You hear those guys saying it. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's not going to happen with a full spring football season.
No.
Like, your best bet is to do what the MIAA is talking about.
Absolutely.
You know, have a few scrimmages. You know, like, mm-hmm. If you're Ohio State, you know, bring Purdue in for a scrimmage or something. And because you're not going to be able to get the effect of what you need there. And it's going to be watered down. There's just so many things that are just not going to work,
mm-hmm.
as we've talked about. And it never seemed logical to me at all once they started talking about it. Moving everything, then you're talking about it. You don't even know. That's the thing about that too is we don't even know what's going to happen with winter sports.
I know.
Okay, so what are you going to do? Like, have everything going on all at once
in the spring? You can't.
It's not going to happen.
Well, definitely not the high school level. You can't.
No.
College would be a nightmare for SIDs. Oh my lord, are you kidding me? It's already going to be tough the way it's already set up.
Yeah, it's just
you can't shove all of it in the same time. I don't think. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, so here's another note for you. Kennedy Brooks, Oklahoma Sooner running back, who's had 2 1,000-yard seasons, he's opting out.
Yeah.
That's a blow for the Oklahoma offense, who's going to have a freshman quarterback, probably, that's going to be their starter, and their first Big 12 game is at home against K-State. That bodes well for K-State if we get to that point.
Yes.
Toby Rowland was on with us, said that Spencer Rattler is going to be the quarterback more than likely for Oklahoma, and that would be his second game as a starter and his first against Big 12 competition in Norman against Kansas State, who would have a very experienced quarterback in Skylar Thompson.
Yes.
So, throw that out there. So Oklahoma have a new quarterback, and basically Trey Sermon transferred to Ohio State, which probably wishes he stayed at Oklahoma now, because he can't play at Ohio State right now because of the Big Ten decision, and then he would have probably played more, of course, if Kenny Brooks was going to opt out. The SEC is going to release their schedule, I believe it's tonight. The SEC saving the best for last, I guess.
There we go.
They're going to release their schedule tonight. Whether or not it's going to matter, we shall see. All right, so, you know, a mixture of negative and positive news there throughout much of the first part of the show. We've hit 10 o'clock, so let's get to some positive stuff. Alex Smith. This is not positive initially, but you hang with me. Alex Smith's leg was shattered on November 18th of 2018. In the days following, he got sepsis, which nearly took his life. He spent the next month in a hospital, then 3 months in a wheelchair, then 8 months in an external fixator. He had 17 surgeries within 9 months. And yesterday, he was taken off the PUP, physically unable to perform list, by the Washington football team. They're not the Redskins anymore. Just in. And Alex Smith has been cleared to practice and fight for the quarterback job at the Washington football team. How amazing is that?
It's crazy.
I don't know if I've ever cheered. I don't know if I've ever wanted to cheer harder for an athlete as I am for Alex Smith. To just get on the field and play one snap would be amazing.
Oh,
during
an
NFL regular season game, what he's gone through, and something tells me he's going to start a game. Something tells me he's.
Yeah,
going.
It's not. I mean
that job is open.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dwayne Haskins isn't really the answer.
Watch
I don't think.
Project 11 or not, but it's like he. His aim is not just to say, hey, I made it back.
No,
to get
he wants
onto
to
the
get
field.
His job back.
Like, his aim is, I'm playing, and I'm playing at a high level here.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to start, and I'm going to do what I was doing before.
Mm-hmm.
That's his aim.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now he's on target for that. If he keeps going like he is, I'm not going to put it past him.
Absolutely. Now, let's go back to high school sports for a moment. I retweeted this out there, and I've seen some other people in the radio industry retweeting some of the stuff I've retweeted, or I was second or third to retweet. I don't care who was first. It doesn't matter, because I like that the word's getting around. The idea now out there is when you not know what kind of high school football season you're going to have, the first home game is senior night.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yes.
The first home game, if you're lucky enough to have a first home game, you have senior night. Now, see, I think Beloit, for instance, their first two games are on the road. So their senior night, their first home game wouldn't be the week three. Whether we get that far, I don't know. But if you got the first game of the year and it's at home, you might want to do senior night right off the bat.
Not a bad idea at all.
No. Cool. We're in agreement on that one. The NFL playoff schedule, the NBA, excuse me, they are going to start the playoffs here today. The play-in game, it was the Trailblazers winning. Carmelo Anthony with a big shot against the Grizzlies to ice it. C.J. McCollum with a broken back. Still playing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Blazers get in as the 8th seed, which I think is the best matchup in regards to what people want to watch between the Lakers and the Blazers, 1 versus 8. Here's an interesting story, though, and this is how COVID-19 affects things even when nobody has COVID-19 in the bubble. The Jazz and the Nuggets play game one this afternoon at 12:30, which is going to be weird. NBA playoff games during the afternoon because they're playing at two different like gyms, I believe it is, in Orlando. And there's four games. We'll go over the schedule here in a moment, the NBA playoffs, and make our predictions. But Mike Conley has left the bubble for the birth of his third child with his wife, which is what he should do, be with his wife. But here's the problem. He leaves, and then, you know, normally you could just leave and come back, and you might be able to play the same day. He has to go through quarantine to come back. He has to pass two tests, and it means that he'll be out for games 1 and 2 automatically just by leaving to be with his wife, which is unfortunate, but I understand. And he may miss more.
Yeah.
And he has averaged 20 points a game when they played the Nuggets. He is their starting point guard, the Jazz. So that's a big blow for the Jazz because, you know, it's all Mike Conley's wife's fault because she had decided to go into labor. I would argue it's partially his fault as well.
Mike had something to do with it, I think.
I don't think we can totally excuse Mike.
No.
No. Wanted to be like Mike. Oh, but not different. That's a different Mike. That's Michael Jordan.
I don't know if you understand science or not.
I commend athletes that go back to have to bring a child into the world. There are some athletes that have missed the birth of their child because they put sports first. To me, that's one of those things where family has to come first. And in this case, it's going to hurt his team in the playoffs. But family should be first. You know, team probably should be second, to be quite honest with you. And you could say God could be first, whatever you want to argue. But so here's the playoff schedule today. 12:30 Jazz Nuggets, which should be a great series. All the Western Conference series, I think, are going to be great, except the one that some people are talking about an upset. I don't see it. But Jazz Nuggets, that's game one today at 12:30 on ESPN. Then it's the Nets and the Raptors. Raptors the 2 seed, the Nets the 7. Remember the Nets had all these guys that couldn't play?
Yeah.
And Durant and Irving aren't playing, and yet the Nets, they almost kept the Trailblazers out of the playoffs. They've been playing well in the bubble. Remember, there's no home court advantage now, which is going to make this a little bit weird.
Oh, sure.
3 o'clock, Nets and the Raptors. At 5:30 tonight, it's the Sixers against the Celtics. The Sixers, the 6 seed. The Celtics are the 3. And then I think it's going to be a great series, and I'm looking forward to this one, watching Kawhi Leonard, Paul George against Luka Doncic and Porzingis. It's a great 7-2 matchup. Mavericks, 7 seed. Clippers, a 2. The Clippers are my pick before the season to win the whole thing. I stand by that. But that's going to be a very difficult first-round series, I think, for the Clippers. That's at 8 o'clock, game one of that series. Then tomorrow, the other 4 games that are going to take place on TNT at 12:30, it's the Magic against the Bucks. I think the Bucks should cruise in that one, although they have struggled in the bubble. The Bucks the 1, Orlando's the 8. I think a fascinating series is in the East at 3 o'clock tomorrow, game one on TNT. At the Heat, the 4 seed, the Pacers, the 5. I don't know how to pick that series. I think that could go either way. I do think the winner of that series can give the Bucks a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 5:30 tomorrow night, game one, it's the Thunder and the Rockets. The Thunder go against Russell Westbrook. And the Rockets, problem is, Russell Westbrook has a quad injury and might miss this series. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But the Thunder are going. Wouldn't it be interesting? Wouldn't it be funny? Chris Paul against his former team. Mm-hmm. Westbrook against his former team. I think it'd be hilarious if the Thunder beat the Rockets in this series. And I think it can happen.
Oh, it definitely could happen.
Yeah, the Thunder are good. I mean, they've got some talent. And then the 1-8 matchup, it's the Trailblazers, the 8, versus the Lakers, the 1 seed. That's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night on TNT. So I've been seeing people writing stories, and I disagree with Todd. Todd's been texting me about how the Blazers could beat the Lakers in the series, and he talked about Lillard's going to average 50 a game against the Lakers. I'm like, okay, let's settle down. I think he's joking in that part. I would hope so. Listen, the Lakers haven't looked good in the bubble. They've been struggling to shoot the 3. I don't care. Playoff basketball is completely different.
Yeah.
Now, the wild card to this, in my opinion, is there is no home court.
That's for me. That's why I'm not, like, writing off the Blazers.
No, I'm not either.
It's, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about it, so it makes me a little leery about picking the Blazers to win. But, yeah, that's the wild card here for making picks. Predictions about how this is going to go is that nobody's at home and nobody has that advantage.
I've heard the Lakers don't have perimeter defense. Have you watched the Trailblazers play? They don't have any defense.
Yeah.
The Blazers gave up 70 points to the Nets the other night, and they don't have Irving or Durant and a whole bunch of guys you don't even know. They don't play defense. So they give up 122 to the Grizzlies. So you sit here and say, well, Lakers don't play perimeter D. Okay, that could be true. The Blazers don't play D, period. So how are how are the Lakers going to match up with Damian Lillard? How are the Blazers going to match up with LeBron and Anthony Davis?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when people make an argument on one side, you totally ignore the other side.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. Let's look at it objectively. The Lakers have perhaps 2 of the best 5 players in the league. The Trailblazers have maybe the hottest player in the league. McCollum's a good player, but he has a fractured back. Who knows what's going to happen there if that flares up? Carmelo's not exactly a defensive stalwart. I don't know if you can count on Carmelo to be great. I think he'd be solid. They got Nurkic back as a center. That gives him some size, but he's not as athletic as Anthony Davis. Now, could the Achilles heel be you pack it against Anthony Davis and you make Danny Green and others shoot the 3 and J.R. Smith and then maybe LeBron? Listen, LeBron's never lost in the first round of the playoffs. It's not happening this year either. Mark it down. Save the clip, and I hope I'm wrong. I love to eat crow because I'll be cheering for the Blazers to win this series, to be quite frank with you.
Oh, absolutely.
But I don't see the Blazers winning the series at all. I think the Lakers win it. I would say 5, but I'll be nice and I'll buy into some of the hype. I'll say since they don't have there's no real home court advantage, I'll say the Lakers win in 6. But I don't think the Lakers are going to be super challenged. I mean, I could see them up 3-1, give up a game, no big deal, win it in 6. I don't see this thing going 7. I could see the Lakers winning this in 5. I think the Blazers get at least 1, but I don't see the Lakers losing this series, do you?
I can't pick it. obviously, like you said, I want the Blazers to win the series, but I can't actually go on the limb and pick it like a lot of these people are. Like I said moments ago, it's just like it's too many people that it's trendy with, and it's like I just don't see it happening.
Who's going to guard Damian Lillard? Who's going to guard LeBron James? And LeBron, this might be his last chance to really win a title, perhaps. He's still playing great ball. He could be MVP, by the way. Could be every year. And LeBron's not going to let this team lose. As long as LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy, now that's a wild card. If one of them gets hurt, then all bets are off. But they're going to have a game plan for Lillard. Lillard might get 40, but he might have to take 26 shots. And if he has to take 26 shots to get 40, Lakers are going to win. Oklahoma City and Houston, who are you picking that series?
I'm going to pick the Thunder.
Sweet. I'll go the Thunder in seven. Cool with that?
I'll say six.
Okay, cool. Westbrook comes back and misses a three to win it in game seven. Heat Pacers. I want the Pacers to win, but I don't know. Heat are a pretty good team. I'm going to go with the Heat in seven.
So I don't know enough about those teams to be completely honest with you. I'll pick Miami in six.
In six?
Yeah.
All right, Bucks Magic. I'm going to say the Bucks in five.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Nets Raptors. I'll take the Raptors in six.
Yeah, I was on the same deal there.
Jazz Nuggets. I'll take the Nuggets in six because Conley's out.
In five because of that.
Okay.
The Jazz, they haven't been playing like overly great in the bubble, and I think the Nuggets are prepared to be pretty good in this.
I think they could be the big time sleeper. Yeah. Celtics Sixers, I'll take the Celtics in six. Ben Simmons is out for the playoffs.
Yeah, Celtics six.
And Embiid will get hurt probably. Clippers Mavericks, I think that's gonna be a great series. I want to say seven, but I'm gonna say six. Clippers in six.
I'll say seven for the Clippers.
Okay, I'm gonna push it all the way to the max. Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be all right. Okay, the NHL playoffs. Believe it or not, I've been watching some hockey because my middle son likes to watch hockey. And I have to admit, I was mesmerized yesterday. I'll talk about the game here in a moment. The Islanders beat the Capitals 2-1. Islanders win that game in overtime. They're up 3-0 in their best of seven. The Blackhawks stave off elimination. They win game four against the Vegas Golden Knights 3-1. So Vegas leads 3-1 in that series. The Flyers beat the Canadiens 1-0. They lead their best of seven, 2-1 over the Canadiens. The Blues win in overtime to avoid going down 3-0. They're down 2-1 to the Canucks. And then games today, the Lightning and the Blue Jackets will play. The Lightning up 2-1. Avalanche Coyotes, Colorado's up 2-1. Bruins Hurricanes, Bruins are up 2-1. And the Blues Canucks will play game four. Vancouver up 2-1 over St. Louis. I'll go back to a game yesterday I was watching. Man, I tell you, you don't see this very often. And for some weird reason, I had a feeling that something like it might happen. The Stars were playing the Flames. The Stars are the 3 seed. The Flames are the 6 seed, okay? And so this is the first real round. There was play-in rounds, but this is the first real round. 3 versus 6. So in essence, first round of the NHL playoffs. And the Flames are the 6 seed, and they're up 4-3. About a minute and a half to go in the match or in the game. And the Stars pull their goalie, and they got extra player on offense. And the Stars had taken like 55-some shots, and the goalie for the Flames had only given up 3, which is pretty good. I mean, the Stars have been shooting left and right. This guy was under fire the whole game, this goalie. Did a great job. And something told me somehow the Stars are going to find a way to score before, just like at the last second, which you don't see in hockey, hardly ever. I'm watching it. They keep firing. They're missing, getting something stopped. I'm like, as long as they don't mess up and let it go all the way down in the empty net, they're going to have a chance. They scored with 11 seconds, I think it was, or 15 seconds. The Stars scored, tied the game. The Flames were 15 seconds away for being up 3-1 in the series. As soon as the Stars scored that goal, I'm like, this series is tied. Because even though that tied the game and it went in overtime, the Stars, of course, did win in overtime, as I thought they would. And now that series is 2-2. If the Stars win that series, you got to point to that goal with like 11 or 15 seconds left.
Oh, yeah.
That changed the complexion of the series. How many times do you see that in series, whether it be baseball series? Well, how about the Red Sox changed the whole series when Dave Roberts pinch ran and stole second?
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, they won that game and then won 4 more and beat the Yankees. It's amazing how things can change. I mean, your Royals were dead in the water against the Astros, and then one error on Carlos Correa or a bad, weird bounce opened up the floodgates for the Royals to win that game, come all the way back, and win a World Series. It's just amazing how things can change the momentum. I remember the Mavericks and the Heat. I remember the Mavericks up 2-0, and they won the first two in Miami. You're like, oh, Shaq and the Heat are toast. Next thing you know, they won the next four and won the series. It changed. So we always overreact when a team is down 2-0 or it's 3-1 and you give up. Oh, the Cavaliers are cooked against the Warriors. There's no way the Cavs can come back from 3-1. I remember I was one of the few in probably the world that was saying everybody, you better not let this go seven or LeBron's going to win it. And I said, all you got to do is win one and put the pressure on the Warriors. And then Draymond Green got suspended, so I opened up the door for game five. And next thing you know, it went to a game seven. You just can't sit here and get comfortable, is my point. If you're up 2-0 in a series, you're up 3-1, you better finish it as soon as you can. You get the mentality that, well, we got an extra one to play with. That's when you get in trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Flames are sitting here up 4-3, and they're just trying to hold them off. And they hold them off for another 15 seconds. They're up 3-1. And I'm not saying the series is over, but they're in great shape. Now it's 2-2, and they're hanging their daubers because they should have won that game. And now the Stars, the 3 seed, have a new lease on life. And they're going to be sky high, ready to play. They're going to play tomorrow. So only one day off between games. Mm-hmm. So that's just what's great about sports and series. But you see it in individual games, right? You see a great game, and then all of a sudden one crazy play or one call can just change everything. Momentum is a fickle thing.
Absolutely it is. I don't go to the Heat Mavs for that 2-0 thing. I go to that year the Spurs were just dominating the Thunder.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
They were up 2-0. The Thunder could do absolutely nothing against them. And then they changed their defense, and Serge Ibaka just, like, dominated the paint the rest of the series, and Thunder won four in a row.
Yeah,
and
right.
They ended up winning 4-2. I mean, they could do nothing against the Spurs for the first two games.
Yep.
The Spurs won by 40 in game one,
I think. That's right.
And it's like, it just doesn't – that's why it's a series. It's not just one game.
That's why
advance.
It's called adjustments.
That's why it's – 60-minute hockey game or whatever, or whatever it is. There's 320-minute periods. So, yeah, that's 60-minute hockey game. It's not 59 minutes and 45-second hockey game.
Yeah, right. And not to bring up a sore subject for you, but, I mean, if you want to look at a shot that changed a complete series, all you got to do is look at Ray Allen's three.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
When Duncan wasn't on the floor, which I'm sure Popovich will take that to the grave, regret that one. And the Heat, you know, came back. They tied that game and then eventually won. And then won game seven, and everybody knew game seven was going to go to the Heat because the Spurs had their chance, and they knew they had their chance. And all the momentum was pushed the other way going into game seven, and you more than likely felt like that was it. It was kind of like the Royals and Astros, game four. When they came back, won game four, you know, going back to Kansas City, that series was – I mean, the Royals weren't going to lose game five at home.
No.
I mean, I still was nervous as a Royals fan.
Well, yeah.
But you just – the odds were in their favor, you know, and it's just amazing how that happened. I mean, the Spurs – you know, they get one offensive rebound. That series is over in six, and LeBron has one less championship. Now, do the Spurs win the title
Spurs
the very next year?
They might have one less championship.
They might.
Well, no, they wouldn't have one less, but they wouldn't have an extra
right,
one, I guess.
Right, they might not have won it
still
the next
have five,
year.
But...
yeah, they might not have won it the very next year. So it is amazing how sports can change on momentum no matter what the sport is. It's pretty, pretty good stuff, and that's why we like sports, and that's why we want to see a lot of sports. But whether or not we're going to get a lot of sports is all going to depend on how we handle this pandemic or COVID-19. Are we going to quarantine everybody right away after one positive test, or are we going to perhaps fight through a little bit? I don't know the answer. I don't know if anybody really fully has a perfect plan or a great plan as to how we're going to deal with positive tests. What would the NBA do if there's suddenly positive tests in the bubble? I don't know how they're going to handle that. Hopefully they won't. So far they've been good, but they've talked about now each player getting one ticket for a fan or a wife, a spouse, or whatever, to come after the first round of the playoffs. My thought process to that is, why risk it now?
The bubble's the bubble. Keep it where
it is.
I saw
don't
that
ruin
on
that.
Friday or Thursday.
Is that really worth the risk? First of all, it's not going to create a whole bunch of ambience anyway.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what's going to that'll implode your great plan. People made fun of this plan initially. Remember? The NBA was ridiculed for this plan by some. And now they look like geniuses. And I do wonder if the Big Ten and the Pac-12, after being ridiculed for what they did, I wonder if, in retrospect, we're going to say, you know what? They were just ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm wrong on that one, too, because I want to see the Big 12 play football this year. But
I was one that didn't think the NBA thing was going to work.
No, I didn't either.
I didn't think they were going to play basketball, and I'm not too proud to admit that. You know, just didn't think it was going to happen.
No, I thought it worked for a while.
Didn't
I just didn't
seem
think
like it was going to work for me, and then all the other people that were still going to have to come into work at those facilities. But it's working right now, and I saw that. I was like, you have no positive test. Why are you going to risk it? Why are you going to add another element to this?
In fairness, though, they got a long way to go yet in the bubble. because you've got a lot of playoff games to play.
Yeah.
And in fairness, the NHL bubble's been very, very effective as well. And they've done the right thing with two hubs in Canada.
And I was just going to say, Canada is the key to that,
yes,
too. They're in a country that is doing things a lot different than the U.S. is doing as far as mitigating issues.
Correct. However, they still have a long way to go,
they
too.
They do, yes.
To finish this thing. So they're not out of the woods, neither one of these leagues. But the bubble seems to be working, and that leads you to the idea of a college hoops bubble. A non-con bubble down in Houston has been talked about. NCAA tournament bubble and have maybe 16, 32 teams instead of 68 in March. Those are things I talked about on the show last Friday. Who knows where this is all headed? But I can tell you this. I think one of the best lines I've heard during this whole COVID-19 pandemic coming from an athletic official would be the line that came from Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12. And I think he sums it up really well. We had a really good plan 60 days ago, and now it's garbage. The plan today might sound great, but in 6 or 16 or 60 days from now, it might be garbage.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
94.1 Radar Weather.